Now, when cinemas closed in lockdown, few people could have expected that when the doors opened, Irish cinema-goers would return in larger numbers than before the pandemic. It's exactly what happened as people bought tickets to movie after movie, starting off with the James Bond No Time to Die. My guest this morning has been working in the film industry for over 25 years. He has seen many changes to Irish cinema. He's welcomed A-list stars to Ireland. Maurice Galway, good morning.
Good morning, Rick.
And how is it in the glorious kingdom this morning?
Fantastic. It's a nice kind of sleepy dingle this morning. You know, they're all resting after a big weekend of other voices, I'm sure.
I can understand. Maurice, you yourself have lived and breathed Irish cinema pretty much for the majority of your life.
Absolutely. You know, I've always loved cinema ever since I was a child. But, you know, I came back to Kerry in 1994, and funnily, that Arnott's have an ad there. That's where I was working. I was working in Arnott's at the time. And because of that, you know, I got to go on the Thai show. I built those Lego bricks that people had to guess how many bricks there were. I had to display those, and I met Gay Byrne at the time. But anyway, I came back to Kerry, and I ended up you know, with Sauli at Kerry. It was an arts festival, and they did a shorts film programme. And that eventually became, in 2000, the Kerry Film Festival that I set up. And then it was the Dingle Film Festival in 2007, and now Animation Dingle, of course, which occurs every March. So it's been, about 27 years now in festivals. And I've been watching film, you know, for all that time, particularly new talent coming up. You know, we get a lot of festival entries, and that's the real passion, just to see what comes in every year. Look, at the moment we're viewing hundreds of short animations from students all over Ireland and all over the world, and that makes it a real pleasure, you know.
I know a few people who do this across the country, Maurice. Mm. It is not an easy gig, and more importantly, it's something that kind of can take over your life, isn't it?
Well, this is it. You know, people think, oh, it's very nice, isn't it, sitting down watching shorts or feature films. And I mean, that's obviously part of it. There's a lot more to it in terms of the administration and the marketing and the financing. But, you know, it's a real challenge because, you know, you want to give everybody, you know, the same, you know, care and attention. So you've got to watch everything with incredible care. And it's a very important job because this is a young person's life. You know, this is something they're entering into. They've usually spent like 4 years studying. It can be the end of, you know, their degree piece. And so it's a very important job to be fair and view it with great integrity, you know, and give them a good score and hopefully exhibit them to their peers and everyone else, you know.
Maybe talk us through, for those people who aren't necessarily aware of the grand sweep of this, some of the changes that you've seen yourself firsthand in Irish cinema from when you started your career.
Well, first of all, when I started, I mean, people sent me VHS tapes, you know. That's how we viewed work. And, you know, I remember, for example, one time I got Mike Lee on the phone, you know, the director, which I couldn't believe. A friend of mine, Nico Brown, had done music on his films, and he got me Mike Lee's number, and I had to call him up on the phone, you know, a landline, and suggest to him if he judged the best director competition. This was at the Kerry Film Festival at the time. I would send him 10 videotapes of these 10 directors' work. So videotapes, but I remember it changed so quickly. It was like overnight, just the following year, all of a sudden, you're receiving DVDs. And I would love actually using DigiBeta. It was a great format to show a film because, you know, DVDs came in and they were just like a nightmare because they were so glitchy. And we had like just some really funny moments. I remember Jim Sheridan being in the audience at the Phoenix Cinema, and he gave us a scratch DVD tape of his film Brothers that still had the, you know, the numbers turning and that on it. It was an early edit. And towards the end of it, which was a big climax, it just started jumping and, you know, it was very, very scary stuff. I mean, it's like, you know, it's like heart attack stuff, really. But you know, if you go back like to the 80s, like, you know, VHS came in and that was like a big threat, obviously, to cinemas. And I think at the time as well, like distribution was a bit of an issue, you know, getting the 35 millimeters down to the country. But the Phoenix, which you might talk about, like they were so clever, like Michael O'Sullivan, like he built like a video shop beside his cinema. And I could never understand when I saw that, why every cinema in Ireland didn't do that at the time. But yeah, many changes. But now, you know, everything is like streaming. Like this March, like, for example, because of COVID, like Animation Dingle, like we streamed the entire festival live to an audience that we extended upon and reached, you know, all over the world, you know, viewers like in Russia and China, like just extraordinary in that regard. And you know, if we show a film here in Dingle, you know, or a short, your short, let's say, you know, in the church in St. James's, or maybe it was in the Phoenix Cinema, you know, we can put 150 odd people in there. But with streaming, all of a sudden, you know, views on that film went up to like 2,000 views, you know, across the world. So it's we're just in a very different place right now.
I've wondered about this loads of times, because I've just finished myself this weekend, just gone. I was in the French Film Festival in the in the IFI here in Dublin, and that's been running for the last couple of weeks. And that as well had an online part of it. So you could see probably, I think it was about six or seven films throughout the festival that were available on the IFI at home platform. But as a programmer, there's obviously a certain amount of satisfaction to be gotten from seeing 2,500 people watching that. But it's not the same as having people in a room appreciating a film that you've chosen, is it?
No, absolutely not. Like, I mean, for me, like, I just love that experience of being in a darkened space watching a film, and that before it starts. I mean, it's so exciting, you know. And I think it's like, it reminds me of, you know, when we invented fire, you know, we came together, you know, we went around the fire and we began to tell stories. And here in Ireland, we love to tell stories. And I think the cinema is like that. We come together within this darkened space and we watch a story evolve in front of us, and we're doing it together. And then the real joy, of course, is like afterwards when we meet, you know, in the lobby, or you go for a coffee, you go for a pint, and you talk about what you've just experienced for the first time together. You know, it's a wonderful privilege.
Tell me about some of your time working with the festivals and some of the names in cinema that ended up turning up over the years or that contributed in some way.
Yeah, well, like, there's been so many. I remember having, I had such good fun at the Kerry Film Festival. One of my highest experiences there was Andrew Lou Goldman, ALO as he was known. You know, he managed the Rolling Stones, I think like 63 to 67. And, you know, we sat having lunch and he had this amazing interview with B.P. Fallon on the stage and Shem Satira. But he just told these incredible stories about the Stones, you know. But like on music, a character that I'll never forget and became a huge part of my life was this man called Jeff Wanfer. Now, Jeff, and you were speaking about the Beatles earlier, which I'm about 5 hours in. I've watched two of those. And by the way, I know, like, not to be flippant, but, like, you know, warning of smoking is one thing. They should have mentioned the tea drinking. I've never seen such tea drinking in all my life.
And orange squash. There's a lot of orange squash knocking around too.
Yes, orange squash, tea and toast, marmalade, butter. These all feature very highly on the list. But Jeff, we invited to Dingle because Apple gave me permission to screen the entire Beatles anthology, the full 10 hours, in a tent. Now, this was because the man that produced the Chips Chipperfield had passed away at this stage, but he was living in Dingle. We became great friends and we were talking before he passed away of this idea of a love tent and doing something with the Beatles. And in his memory afterwards, I got to see Jonathan Clyde. I got to go over to Abbey Road and experience all of that, which was amazing. And Jonathan asked, you know, the Beatles that were left and the powers that be if this could happen. And they gave us permission. I don't think it happened since, but we did actually put the entire 10 hours of the Beatles on in a tent in the Garden Cafe. And Jeff Wanfer, who directed it, came, and he's a Nordie. And he says, the first thing he said to me, like after we'd had a night, you know, and he said to me the following morning, has anybody made a documentary on you? And I said, no. And he said, I will. And the following day, he talked to his DOP, Eugene O'Connor, who actually was the DOP in my own film on Pauline Buick, Yellow Man, Grey Man. And he's met me the day later and he says, you know, Eugene's on. And then Philip King interviews him on the third day in the tent. And he announces that he's coming back to make this documentary. And it was like, what? And he actually did. He came back and he made a feature documentary on the Dingle Film Festival, We'll Always Have Dingle, which was, you know, an incredible experience and captured so many wonderful people. Cillian Murphy was there at the time and he went on film for the feature. Stephen Frears was there and I loved meeting him because, like, I mean, I think The Queen is a masterpiece. I always loved Dangerous Liaisons. But he sat with me at dinner one evening and I said to him, Stephen, I said, what's your favourite film? And he said, that you worked on? And he said, The Snapper. I said, well, you're just saying that now because you're in Ireland. And he said, no. He said, it was the best script I ever read. And I said, really? He said, it came in the post and he could feel it. He could feel it was so good that he put it aside and he couldn't open the envelope for about 3 days. So I thought that was really great.
That sounds like one of those conversations that can only happen in the aftermath of some kind of Irish film, book, arts festival that's happening around the country. They happen at all of them. They're kind of, they're slightly strange and magical places. Yeah.
You know, you're right. And that's just it. I mean, I think that conversation happened in Curran's Bar with Stephen. And it's like there's only a few days in a festival. But I guess, you know, you're 12 months leading to this point. And you've been speaking and communicating with these individuals for a long time. And eventually, you know, they're with you. And it's like they're your best friend, and we've achieved something by just showing up and, like, you know, being here. Bonnie Arnold, like a wonderful guest at Animation Dingle. You know, she was with DreamWorks at the time, and like I was having dinner with her and John Rice, my partner in Animation Dingle. So we're in the Global Village, and we're chatting with her, and she's come from live action to animation. And her first film, she starts telling us about how and why she got to produce, was Toy Story. And it's like, bloody hell. And then she goes on to do How to Train Your Dragon, the whole trilogy. And Dean DeBlue, who directed that, like, he was here, you know. He's directed those, you know, a gorgeous man. But, I mean, Laura Dern was very special. Like, you know, she was a really wonderful lady. And, you know, I'm a huge David Lynch fan, right? And we're sitting together. The first morning I met her in the Skelligs Hotel, we're having a cup of coffee in the breakfast room, and she's really charming and she's gorgeous, and we're having a lovely chat and her phone bings. And it's like, oh, it's David. It's David Lynch texting her, wishing her luck, picking up the Gregory Peck Award in Dingle. It was like, oh my God. You know, so it's just endless. I mean, there's been so many people.
I want to talk to you as well, maybe just very briefly, about something that's slightly less happy, because I saw a couple of weeks ago the news story about the Phoenix Cinema closing for the last time. Maybe for those people who don't know anything about the nature of the Phoenix Cinema, or even the position that it holds now in terms of Irish cinema exhibition, just tell us a little bit about that.
Well, first of all, it was exhibiting film for over 100 years. It was built in 1918, and it burnt down twice. thus the name The Phoenix, I think, 1937. Now, the two brothers at that time, John and James Houlihan, they were burning peat, like, out the back to generate electricity to power the two Italian projectors.
It was a turf-fired cinema.
Exactly. Isn't that brilliant? And then they were selling that electricity up the town. Like, which is just like, the innovation is unbelievable. But, you know, John Moore, this man, he had it in the 50s, right up to like 79. He sold it to Michael O'Sullivan. And really, you know, for me, it's, you know, when I think of the Phoenix Cinema, I think of Michael O'Sullivan. And anybody kind of my age area, I guess, you know, but, you know, went to the Phoenix. Like, the Tuesday nights were just something else. It was one of the longest running film clubs in the country, Unbroken. And every Tuesday night, Michael came in, you know, he walked up and down, you know, a few times first before he got going. But, like, you know, and Sean then would bring out a hat, you know, it's kind of a hat stand with a wire on it and a bulb. And Michael would come to the front and he would tell you about next week's film that was coming. And he would unveil the poster, you know, the big large quad of that film. Something he always loved, because, like, when I was coming, he'd grab me by the arm and he'd say, Morris, what film have you got for me for the festival? And I'd tell him a film. He says, I've read about it in the New York Times. And I say, fantastic. And then he says to me, can you get me a poster? He always wanted the poster. And I would bring over these posters to him and he'd roll them out. And I'd call to his house, you know, and he'd have a big cigar. And he'd say to me, would you have a whiskey or something? I said, No, I don't really want a whiskey. You'll have a B&B. That's like a brandy and Benedictine at about 2 o'clock in the day, you know. But the cinema, it was a real, like, cinema paradiso. And, like, it opened. Michael opened it on the 13th of July. 1980, right? Kramer versus Kramer, but also The Empire Strikes Back. And I just think that's so ironic that Rian Johnson's Star Wars The Last Jedi is to be shot in Dingle all these years later, that that was the opening film for Michael in The Phoenix, you know.
Honestly, Morris, I could spend the rest of the morning talking to you here, but I don't have time for it, sadly. But Morris Galway in our studios in Kerry, it's been brilliant. Thanks a million.
Thank you.